welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. My name's Phil Holdsworth of Aurum Gold, and my guest today is the wonderful Jan Skye from the organisation Brain Potential. Jan is a neuropsychotherapist that works in the area of leadership powered by neuroscience. Now, welcome, Jan, from all the way from Australia.
Thank you, Phil. It's very good to be here. Thanks.
It's lovely to have you. I've been looking forward to having a conversation with you, Jan, because I know your area of specialism. And I thought this would be something that would really help our listeners at this time, because right now, stress and anxiety is on the increase, and this has a profound impact on us as individuals and on the way our brain operates. Jan, would you like to say a little bit more about this? Because I know this is an area that you're particularly keen to raise awareness around.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Stress is one of the major factors that causes so much disharmony to the soul, and that impacts our family life, it impacts our work life. And one of the major causes is the subject, of course, you work in as well, Phil, is money. So lack of or not enough money or rising costs of petrol and anything else that's rising really can come back and just cause so much worry.
Yes.
And stress is an interesting subject because we all need a certain amount of stress. We can't go without minimal stress in our life. But it's like if you take a plastic ruler, for example, and if you could bend it just slightly and you can see the bounce in it, that's probably the amount of stress that's enough. But if you pull each side of that ruler down to the point where it just snapped in the middle, that's the type of stress that spirals us down and into what a lot of people call burnout, depression, really, terrible side effects of stress. Yeah. So I guess with stress, it's just recognizing those little things that are happening to us, recognizing what's happening in our body for a start, because it's the behavior we see, whether it's panic attacks or anxiety or high blood pressure or racing brain, all of those things, just being aware.
Yeah, the one thing that really fascinates me about what happens within us when we are in that perhaps unhealthy stress that you talk about, where you're at the point of sort of burnout or breaking, even though we may not necessarily know we're at that point. Mm. But right now, I know there's a lot of people in our nation who are very concerned about the future, very concerned about the rising cost of living and so on, as you rightly pointed out, and are under a tremendous amount of stress. That stress can have a profound impact on our brains, can't it? And I know that you do a lot of work around this. Tell us a little bit about how that will impact the brain, and how does the brain sort of cope with this, and what's actually going on there?
Sure. So if we just look at stress can come from external sources, such as the worry about the rising costs of living, as you mentioned, and internally. So it's our emotions that are going on as a result of that. And sometimes it's the both at the same time. So I'm going to use my hand and I'll talk you through this to demonstrate the brain. So if you take your hand and you just open it up, put your thumb across the palm of your hand and fold those four fingers over. And if you just bend your wrist slightly, there we have the brain. So the brain develops from the base up and the inside out. So around about your wrist area, just above where a watch would sit, that's the brain stem, the primitive brain that some people talk about.
Yes.
We'll just lift those four fingers for the moment. The thumb represents the limbic area, which is the emotional part of the brain. And then the four fingers over the top, that's what we call the prefrontal cortex. So the part that sits in behind your forehead and goes back down behind your eyes.
Yes.
There's two sides to that, although we need both. The one is more logic thinking, whereas the other is more creative thinking. But they need, creativity needs logic and logic needs creativity. So we don't want to think of them too separately anyway.
Is that a bit like sort of problem solving? So the ability helps you then problem solve.
Correct, yes. So if we come back to our fist that we've got neatly held there in front of us, and we lift up the four fingers, when we're stressed, it's like we've flipped our lid. And it's like we're not using this problem solving, logic, creative part of our brain.
Yeah.
And this limbic area, which is your thumb area, becomes very active. Now, there's a couple of little guys in there. One's the hypothalamus. You don't have to remember the name, but remember it begins with H. And there's the pituitary. The hypothalamus is like the general manager of the organization, your body. The pituitary is like the frontline manager. Frontline manager knows all the factory floor workers. And I'll tell you about them in a minute. So you're remembering the H and remembering the P.
Right.
General manager, the factory floor worker. So stress occurs. And the general manager says, come on, frontline manager, you know what to do. Get those guys working. So a message comes in the brain down to our factory floor workers. Now I've come down, I've drawn a line down, imaginary line, down to about my elbow area there, and that's about our kidney area in our body. Now two little guys that sit on top of our kidneys are adrenals, and they're the factory floor workers. And when the adrenals are overworked, they're producing too much cortisol, gives us brain fog. They're producing adrenaline, which makes our heart race and our breathing very, very shallow. So if you ever go for a stress test, they will measure your HPA axis. And I just told you who they were, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the adrenals. So they're measuring that. But that causes what I call, or produces what I call, a brain-body loop. So remember the two things. Too much cortisol, we get brain fog. You've been there. I've been there. You can't think. It's like, don't give me anything more. I've got enough on my plate as it is. You're very shallow if you're breathing and you're racing, your heart's racing, and you just can't take on any more. There's another loop that goes on, and it's a loop that comes from this limbic region here, and from the little guy called the amygdala that I call the CEO of emotional content. The amygdala sends a message up to the right prefrontal cortex via those neural pathways in the brain. So when you get negative thinking and creativity, that equals catastrophe. So that's called neural looping. So you keep going over and over the same things.
Jan, is this the part where a person could have that potential of catastrophizing? So therefore, they're looking at the worst case scenario as though it's actually happened, but it hasn't happened.
Yes, and if we put that into a money perspective, like this bill that might be £200, or in Australian language, $200, or would it be $400? I'm not sure of the conversion rate. by the end of the day, because we've catastrophized, it's like, I'll never be able to pay that. I need that much money just to live on each week. I'll never be able to get ahead. The whole world may as well come to an end because, well, my life may as well be over.
This is fantastic, Jan. It's really the way you're describing it is superb. And I'll come back to that point you've just made about I'll never be able to do this, because we actually talk about the mindset that sometimes people have about what money might give them, like happiness and so on. So we'll come back to that in a moment. But so in terms of the build-up of this stress and this brain fog that we're experiencing, this inability to be creative, we know, even in the workplace setting, when people are stressed and anxious, they're also distracted, and the creative element within them is hampered. It can't function to the level that it would normally be able to function if they were in a normal state. And, you know, in our nation, figures tell us that somewhere in the region of 94% of our working population are worried about money for one reason or another. Debt is one reason, but it's not the only one. There are lots of other things. So people who've got money are worried about money. And, you know, and this is the myth that people hold, that where somebody's worried about money, oh, they must be in debt. They must have money problems. But in actual fact, we've got many wealthy people who worry about money and behave in very unique ways in terms of how they manage their money. And one good example that probably many people will know of was a chap called Paul Getty, who no longer with us, very, very wealthy person, who his behaviour with money was that he every day he would check the money markets to see what was going on. It was almost like he had to have his finger on the pulse of what was happening to his money at any point in time. And he would make decisions that he believed would give him a return. One day, his grandson's kidnapped. His daughter-in-law comes to him and asks him, will you pay the ransom? And he said no. Now, naturally, everybody would be forgiven for thinking, well, what a selfish man. But nobody ever really asked the question, why did he say no? What was lying behind that? And one of the things that I think, and this is my theory about it, was he was worried about the fact that there is no return. He was losing money, and it was fear was a driver in his life. So he had to be constantly on his money to make sure that it was doing what it meant to do, and that was increasing. And one day somebody actually asked him, how much is enough? And he said, it's never enough. So, you know, there was this unhealthy driver behind him that he needed to get more and more wealth, perhaps because he thought that that would keep him safe or that would give him happiness or whatever it may be. And in clearly in this situation, that wasn't doing that work at all. But when his daughter-in-law threatened to go to the press because she couldn't meet the demands herself, he suddenly paid the ransom. And the reason why he paid the ransom was because reputation is everything. And if his reputation diminished, so would his value, his stock, his, you know, what was happening on the global market. And so he paid the ransom because he could see there was value in paying the ransom because of his reputation. But when he was first asked about it, that wasn't actually the topic of conversation. So it's an interesting one to see that behaviour of somebody who's got money and yet worries about it, as opposed to somebody who is struggling right now with the rising cost of living, is struggling to find where do I get the money to pay these bills and stay on top of the bills, and who you could rightly say this is a very worrying time for them, very stressful time for them. We can understand that part, but we can't understand why somebody wealthy would also have those kind of worries, but for different reasons. So, and I just thought, I find that fascinating then, how the brain operates and the signals it tells itself or tells the body in terms of how to operate. We talk about the three brains, the brain that operates the mind itself, the brain that operates the cardiovascular system, and the brain that operates the digestive system. And I say to people, if you're ever sort of worried about things, does your stomach get upset? And I said, that's your mind. It's part of your brain. It's your yes. body is one big brain, as Dr. Candice Pert once said. She called it the body mind.
Yes, yes. you're so right. And it's all about behavior too, isn't it? And when we think about the stress, and I explained what goes on in the brain and the body.
Yes.
But there's so many other things that occur too. So when we're stressed, we don't feel like eating, or the reverse, we can't get enough of it because it's satisfying us. So it's finding that driver. So going back to Getty's, the driver was his reputation. Yes. As opposed to the money. So his money seemed the primary factor, but the associated behavior around this is my reputation, what will people think of me, that was primary.
And your description of how the way that the brain operates, I'm just thinking, what could we say to our listeners if this has really sort of triggered something in them, in their thought process about their own circumstances or how they might find themselves behaving at this point in time? Maybe they recognize something in themselves that is contributing to their stress or anxiety. What could we say to them right now, that something that perhaps they could do that would help them allow the neocortex, the frontal lobe, the rational and creative part, the logical and creative part, to play a greater part in decision making, as opposed to allowing the limbic and the what some call the reptilian part of the brain?
Well, come back to the hand. And I demonstrated the fingers up in the air. If you're stressed, just recognize this simple analogy of your hand, that you actually have flipped your lid. And you need to calm, breathe, and engage the four fingers. So have a whole of brain activity going on. Because if we're only going to think from our limbic region of the brain, we're going to be very reactive, spontaneous, and not always make the right decisions, because you know when you're stressed, you know when a tragedy happens, you know when something really horrible comes into your life. It's that point where you don't make decisions, because it's like you've got a flipped lid, not literally, but think of your hand, you flipped your lid. You need to calm the brain and the body. And there's lots of exercises you can do, lots of breathing exercises I won't go into, but lots of breathing exercises, a lot of daily practices around short mindfulness things to do. But you need to engage that whole of brain. So you need to engage the cortex, the prefrontal cortex, the limbic, and then the brain stem as well, because they all need to function together and they communicate through the neural network. But when you cut it off, you've only got communication coming from an area in the brain that isn't going to make good decisions for you. It's going to make irrational decisions. And we need a whole of brain to function.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Thank you, Jan. And Just to sort of add toward that, one of the things we often talk about is looking at the facts. So going back to something you were saying earlier, where you'd mentioned about, catastrophizing. It's easy to do that, but to pull back and actually start to look at the facts of a situation and deal only with the facts also brings back perspective. Mm-hmm. And it may be that things are not quite what you think, because when you're only looking at the facts, they may give you a different picture. So I had a client who said they were bad with money. And when we looked at the situation, actually the facts around the situation said they were actually very good with money. But their mindset, when they allowed that to sort of take hold and go with it, would paint a picture that, I suppose, to you and I would say, well, that's catastrophic. But in actual fact, the truth of the matter was they were good with money. So, yes.
And what you just said then, Phil, that mindset saying I'm not good with money, I mean, that's a whole other area of brain topic. That I wonder where that came from. And maybe it came from her parents saying to her, you're not good with money. And she's held on to that thought process. And even though when you looked at how she handled her money, you could see you really are, that was probably a day in her life that changed for her.
Yeah, you're right. It's like many of these things, they do come from our sort of developmental period, and parents play a huge role in that. And in this case, it was, I suppose, quite a critical parent. And when we've been faced with those forms of criticisms, for example, from someone we would trust, like a parent, guardian, carer, or teacher, people like that, we're more likely to absorb that as being truth rather than actually look at the situation and say, well, actually, that's not me. And, and when we're in that developmental period, we're acting, certainly from 0 to 7, we're acting very much like a sponge. But from, and then 13 to about 18, I think they call it the modelling period. We're trying it on like a suit, just seeing if it fits. Well, that sounds like a good idea. I wonder if it'll just fit me. And until we eventually get to the what we call the socialising period, which will be about 18 to 21, somewhere around about that, where we're listening more to our peers and we're starting to formulate our own opinions and ideas about things, but we're absorbing things from other people. And we don't often understand how these can unconsciously embed themselves within us, and then certain events trigger them.
Yes, that's so true.
Yeah.
And the brain doesn't... Oh, sorry.
No, go on, son.
I was just going to say, to add to what you just said, and the brain isn't fully developed or matured until we're 25.
Yes.
And then from 25 onwards, we've got an aging brain. But it doesn't mean we don't stop learning.
No, exactly. And like we were saying earlier, you know, our brain has the potential to create new neural pathways if we're willing to go there and willing to think differently, or help somebody be able for us to be able to think differently. So that whole area of neuroplasticity, and that's a whole other subject. And I'm just conscious that we've kind of run out of time now. But Jan, it's been wonderful talking to you. I love what you do with Brain Potential. I know you do a lot of work in the area of leadership. And, you know, and I think even the other side of the world, you know, these things still hold true wherever we are. And you know, we are human beings, aren't we? We're adaptable creatures, and the work that you're doing is helping people to adapt in a very healthy way. So I suppose they can become a better version of themselves, in a sense.
Yes, and we're all connected too, Phil.
Yes, thank you very much, Jan. It's been wonderful chatting with you. And I wish you all the best with the work that you're doing down in Australia and much further afield.
Thank you, Phil. It's been a pleasure to be with you.